Hey, listen up.
Yeah, we here and we locked in. Let's keep it going all the way to the top 10. We fear the turtle, so it's no other option. Fred and Ryan, just watch them. Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
What's up, Turf fans? Welcome back to yet another edition of the Shell and Tell podcast. It's Tuesday, November 22nd, and on this week's show, we got a lot to digest with this past weekend's game, an unexpectedly close showdown with OSU in the Shell.
Yeah, definitely unexpectedly close. You all know that none of us thought it was going in that direction. I don't feel too bad about doubting the boys that they did it all on their own. And then we'll also look forward to our last game in the Shell, the senior week against the Rutgers Knights, as we look to improve our bowl position and show the progress that we've actually made this year.
Exactly that. And with football winding down, we're going to take a look at the basketball team as they are off to a 5-0 start. Impressive start under head coach Kevin Willard, first head coach to move to 5-0. And we take a look at how they've looked over the weekend.
Your number 23 Terps.
Your number 23 Terps, man. Unexpectedly positive vibes going around the Terps basketball program right now. A lot of exciting things. But before we do, man, let's head over to CQ Stadium. Let's talk about this weekend's game. As I said, the Terps now sit 6-5 overall, 3-5 in the Big Ten after a hard-fought and gutsy performance on Saturday, losing to the Buckeyes 43-30, which that score doesn't tell the whole story of the game.
Not at all.
Not at all.
We were down by 6 points with 9 seconds left and had the dumbest touchdown ever.
Exactly.
Fuck that score.
But the Terps came into this game as 27-point dogs, and the three of us called for a shellacking after what we saw against Penn State, too. So it wasn't just them. It was us as well. But let me tell you, this team showed a lot of heart and will to fight and leave it all on the field the way that they did. I was really proud of the boys. I mean, at one point, they led 13-10 at half. And at that point, you know, I was kind of questioning whether, like, this was reality or not, or was things still going to fall apart. But, you know, as the game went on, I mean, they got down. They were down 33-30 with, like, 2 minutes to go in the game. Just couldn't get the big defensive stop that they needed. But like I said, man, this team showed the world and showed us a lot of heart, a lot of grit, a lot of fight. I love the performance on Saturday.
Yeah, Ahmed, what were your thoughts at halftime? Were you believing that this was really going to be a game, or were you just kind of like looking at the scoreboard going, yeah, but when are they going to explode?
No, I mean, honestly, because, you know, even if the scoreboard, Maryland was down 10, you know, you kind of, even the eyeball test kind of says that, you know, this is a team that looks like they're going to be able to take the punches and give them back. And I thought they kind of did that. Obviously, the third quarter, things went a little bit sideways, and that was when Ohio State was kind of able to control the game, obviously starting with the block punt. But yeah, I mean, you know, at halftime, I thought the offense looked more efficient. I was impressed with what they've done. Again, just being able to move that ball and kind of limiting Marvin Harrison after that first play, really. I think I was more stunned, but there was definitely a time at one point in the game where I thought to myself, I think they can actually win this, and it didn't feel crazy in my head.
I'm not going to lie to you. It wasn't halftime for me. At halftime, I was sitting there going like, wow, this is really weird. I can't believe it. At the end of the first quarter, we're down one. I'm sitting there going, hell, I'll take a loss by four. That sounds great. And then we're at halftime. We're up, and I'm like, is this real life? Or is this going to happen? And then even after the half, they put up the stats. I was sitting there with my wife, and I'm like, you know, we're winning every statistical category. Like, this isn't fluky right now. We're beating them at everything. Yeah. I don't understand what's happening, but certainly when they ran up in the third quarter, I actually was sitting there kind of just smiling to myself, because like, I had started to believe we were going to win and they were running away with it. My wife looks over me like, what are you smiling for after an Ohio State touchdown? And I'm like, because you just knew it was coming.
I think it was after the Ohio State block punt. Excuse me. When that happened, I think that was kind of the okay. Like, is this the, you know, the meltdown that fans had seen over the years? But you know, I thought they kind of responded. Obviously, like
Doug,
I said,
way back. Ohio State,
Yeah, exactly. Ohio State, they took a 17-0 lead, or excuse me, 17-0 advantage in the third quarter alone. But, you know, outside of that, you know, I thought Maryland was largely able to kind of stick to its script and able to disrupt the Buckeyes on both sides of the ball a little bit.
Well, you talk about the punt team failing on us. You know, special teams giveth and special teams taketh away. You had to also mention the other part of the special teams where it could have been really big to let them go up 7 more points, and instead it only was a 4-point swing as we had a blocked extra point go back for 2 points.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was so big. It was so much fun to watch. We have came up on the shit end of that more times than I feel like any school ever, where we block a blocked extra point or field goal is usually a touchdown, like, right. I don't know, 8 out of 10 times. And I swear the last 12 times we've blocked a kick, nothing's happened. So I was, it was so nice to finally get one. Yeah. Like, there's nothing but linemen there. Your fast player blocked it. It should be 6. And finally, it was a score. Unfortunately, not 6, but, you know, it was as good as you could do in that moment.
For me, I think the way that the game started, the first drive, the catch that Marvin Harrison made, I thought immediately, I'm like, yep, he's going for 200 plus yards. He's going to have 15 catches in this game. This is just kind of what we thought was going to happen with this game. That's what's going to happen. But then, you know, after that first down, honestly, or after that first drive, really, they shut him down. He wasn't really much of a factor for the rest of the game. Couple little things here and there. But even when we got to halftime at 13-10 with that lead, Ohio State traditionally this year has been a slow starting team. They've been more of a second half team. So this was just kind of par for the course. But again, the fight that this team showed, and the performance, you know, as much as I'm critical on Leah, especially when the lights are the brightest, I've said it multiple times that he just kind of shits the bed on these big games. I know the mantra from the coach and the staff going into this game is that we got nothing to lose. Go out there and lay it all on the line. Well, you got to give him his flowers when flowers are due. Leah played a hell of a game in this game. Was it perfect? No, but it was one of his best games, especially against a big opponent like this. You're talking the number 2 team in the country, the front runner quarterback on the other side for a Heisman in CJ Stroud. Again, other than the couple of things, he wasn't able to get that final drive in the fourth quarter together to put us over the top. I get that, and we're talking about a loss, but Leah still played his ass off in this game.
He absolutely played his ass off. I mean, the whole team showed up, and we're going to give Marvin Harrison Jr. his credit on the first drive for them. You got to look at the Terps with CJ Dupree going, yeah, this is Sparta, hurdling people after breaking 2 tackles earlier. I mean, this guy just is a 300-pound flyer. It's unbelievable.
He is.
He felt so much bigger than his stat line. I was shocked leaving the stadium to see that it was only 4 for 30 and 1, because he felt like a preeminent reason that they won that game. You look back, he had the very first play that was giant. He got him that first down on that same drive, celebrated, got knocked on his butt by Deitch's going off the field. But he got him on the touchdown, and then huge defensive breakups by him on the very few bad throws by Talia in that game were able to be stopped for being really bad by some good defensive plays by CJ. He played great. He's got nothing to be ashamed of. He left it all on the field.
Yeah, exactly that. I thought he did. I think one of the broken up passes from Dupree was in the red zone, I think, on a touchdown opportunity. So
save points.
Yeah, exactly. I thought he's done a really good job just kind of taking that next step. I think a lot of people saw him as, you know, that primary blocker last year, and then kind of throughout the offseason, you know, it was kind of known that, you know, he has the soft hands and he has the athleticism to be a factor or an asset in the passing attack. And I think this year, especially in the red zone, has shown that he's an efficient target for him. So I think this was just another Big Ten game for him where he's kind of able to kind of show a big step forward. And then, yeah, you know, I think it was good to see, you know, just some of the wide receivers be able to step up. I think Talia completed passes to 9 different receivers on Saturday. So, you know, it was good to see the offense on track as a whole.
Yeah, for sure. The one final thing I'll say about Dupree is that what we've learned about him is his game has kind of progressed, or at least what I'm starting to see is that he is a high energy guy, right? And we talk about the baby Gronk and the comparisons and all that stuff. What I'm starting to see from this guy is that if you get him involved in the offense early and you get him a couple of plays here and there, that energy transpires throughout the entire game on all aspects, blocking, receiving, every which way. You see him on the sidelines, pumping guys up and just going absolutely berserk on the sidelines. I think that's going to be key to his success moving forward, is just getting involved in the offense. And a guy that's built the way he is with the size, the speed, the strength, everything that he has the total package to be that NFL-type protege, that NFL-type protege tight end. It's really, really good to see that starting to come together for him. You know, kudos to CJ Dupree. And like you said, Ahmed, kudos to this offense for just being able to put up the kind of points, the kind of game that they did against, again, one of the best teams in the country.
And I guess I'm lucky they lost, because Fred texted me at one point during the game and said, I swear to God, if they win this game, I'm not coming to another Terps game ever again.
Yeah, for those who don't know, unfortunately, I wasn't able to go to this game. I had some family obligations that I had to go to. But yeah, like you said, at halftime, I still wasn't bought in. But when we got down there and it's 33-30, I'm like, oh my God, Ryan, I swear to God, if they come back and win this game, I am never going to another Terps game again, if that's what this means. But couldn't get it done.
Yeah, and honestly, almost both of us missed this game, because I was stuck in a little Terps purgatory before this game. I made a real bad faux pas, and I'm going to share the story so no Terps fan runs into this hell on earth that I was dealing with before this game. So we had a hot mess. We got 12 tickets that we're juggling. We have 8 on paper because my mom failed to register her online tickets, and my 4 that are electronic that I actually can do things with. So we had a last minute back out. And so I listed 1 ticket for sale that morning. So since I didn't know if I was downloading 3 or 2 tickets, I just left it there and didn't move them to my Apple wallet. Well, the tickets sold at 8:30 a.m. So there's where my excuses end, because 8:30 a.m. it should have been the Apple wallet. Where was it? Not in the Apple wallet. So I got to this stadium and tried to open my tickets account, and it's completely jammed. It's overwhelmed by the number of people there trying to get into this website. Completely crashed, like 404 not found, you know, all this shit. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, oh, maybe it's the cell service. There's too many people here. I gotta run back to the parking lot and try to get better cell service. I'm stuck outside. We don't have enough tickets to get my wife, my kids, and my friend that was with me in. There was no combination. I'm like, do I just get a divorce and just go in the game by myself and just leave her here? What's that, the next move? I don't know what to do here. So for God's sake, please put your tickets in the Apple wallet when you can, because our server is not big enough. I don't know who's running it, but it's not big enough. Luckily, with 3 of us trying to log in from 3 different devices, about 15 minutes into this ordeal, about 30 seconds before kickoff, not 30 seconds before kickoff, but we got through the lines that were ridiculous 30 seconds before kickoff. We were able to get the tickets. So it was definitely a scare. Almost didn't get to see another one of the best games of the year. You know, it's sad that in 2018, the best game of the year was a loss, and this year, possibly the best game's a loss. But, you know, we've still made a lot of progress. We've still made a lot of progress.
Maybe I'm glad I did miss out on that game. I'm sure you were a ton of fun to be around for that 15 minutes of hell.
I tried really hard to not be a problem, because I knew it was my fault. It was no one else's fault but my own. But yeah. I'm sure I wasn't
sure
good.
That went swell. Oh, man. All right. So outside of that, I mean, how was the crowd? How was the environment? I mean, Ohio State fans typically travel pretty well for their team. On TV, it looked pretty good on
Drunk.
Their side.
I don't know if they sell beer in Columbus, Ohio, but they were drinking like it was going out of style. Because of my delay, I was trying to go to the bathroom before the game. Not going to happen. There was a 50-person line out to the middle of the aisle there. Went down to the seats to watch kickoff for a while and everything. Every 12 seconds, I had to stand up for somebody to go get a beer or to go to the bathroom. My legs were eaten before the end of the year. My wife was all stressed out with the girls there, because you know all these drunk people have no mind for the 5-year-old that they're falling on top of, much less the rest of us.
Yeah.
And then 2 of them wanted to fight me on the one time, hey, you suck. The hey, you suck didn't get them. But on the last time through, I went, hey, you suck, and Michigan's going to beat the hell out of you, you, and you.
That set him over the edge.
Yeah, I had this guy look at me. I mean, he was a big dude, but he was short, and he was in the steps below me. I'm pretty sure it would have worked out just fine for me. But he said one of the dumbest things I ever heard. He said, I've been sitting here in this all game, and I let it go, but that's too far. I won't hesitate to mow you all down. What? I don't know who you all is, because Fred's not there, so it's me. My 60-year-old dad's the most intimidating one left on the rest of the field, an 85-year-old man and a bunch of women and 5-year-olds. So I don't know how tough this guy was, but I That's first time I've seen them challenge 5-year-olds and old women. So it was. We were told by Michigan fans, like, bring an arm detail to Columbus. And honestly, after this game, I kind of believe them. I think it's going to be a problem when we go there, Fred. We need bail money. We need to bring bail money.
I'm looking forward to it. That's going to be a fun time. I don't care. The alcohol, though, makes sense, though. I mean, you had two fan bases on very different ends of the spectrum. You had the Maryland fans coming into this game thinking, well, to get through this game, I'm going to need a whole lot of alcohol. So they were probably drinking real early. And then you had the Ohio State fans who were on eggshells pretty much this entire game because it was never out of hand, right? They never had control of this game really until the last 6 seconds of the game. So they're probably just drinking to kind of calm their nerves and whatnot. So the alcohol is not surprising, but the bitterness and the reaction of the fans, that's a little disappointing. But
I know you had some red zone thoughts too, Fred. You texted me about that.
So, yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about the red zone. There's positive things to take away from this and some questions that I wanted to bring up with you guys. So in the short yardage goal line situations, we saw a couple of jumbo packages, which obviously somebody out there is listening because I know we've brought it up a few times on the show.
Joseph Burns is out of the missing persons list.
When are we going to see Burns? He was out there. He was involved. They had these jumbo packages. But instead of running a couple of times, they try to throw. Now, granted, the one, it worked. It went to C.J. Dupree. We got the touchdown out of it. But when you're running, when you've got those formations, again, this is the first time you're doing it. Were you guys kind of taken back or surprised that they didn't just run the ball? Or was that just me?
Yeah, I thought so a little. I thought so a little bit. Obviously, like you said, you know, it worked out with C.J. Dupree. It also worked out with, it wasn't a jumbo package, but just the play calling. But on that fourth down, where Talia was able to find Deshaun Jones, that was more of a great play, great catch by Deshaun, because that was ugly kind of from the start. I think, red zone, statistically, red zone offense has been very good for Maryland. I think they are number 11 or number 2 in the Big Ten, might be behind Ohio State. You have, especially get a guy like Joe Burns, get Austin Fontaine out there, get C.J. Dupree out there, and then have Antoine Littleton right behind him. Kind of feels like if you're not going to get a touchdown, you're going to get a little bit closer to it. So I think that was a little bit frustrating.
Yeah. He got even more creative on that a couple of times. I saw it was not Joseph Burns out there. It was number 33, Nasil Akite, was the one in the backfield. So that was kind of unbelievable to me. Again, I was, I'm sure he's a big, bad man. I've seen him do some things on defense. In fact, I actually met his brother walking to the game. Walking next to us, and he just looked down. He's carrying a baby, and he looks at his baby and says, "You ready to see your uncle play today?" And my wife picked it up. She's like, "Who's your brother?" Like, started talking to him, and so it was his brother. He was cool. We started talking. I think he ended up taking the wrong turn talk with me because all of a sudden, mid conversation, he whipped the Yui and ran back away. I never saw him again. So I think he got a little distracted and away from the pack on that one. But he was real nice, and I was glad to see it. But yeah, it was interesting to see the defensive lineman back there. I liked the play calling. Was the, did it get the job done? No, but, or it did at times, clearly, but I just didn't think that it was as bad as Fred was saying. Because Fred was like, what's the red zone, play calling looking like? We need jump balls, we need everything. But
That was the other part, the other issue I had, was not in the short yardage situations, but when you're 10, 15 yards out, you've got a 6'4 receiver in Dante Demas, you got a couple of 6'5 tight ends in Dupree and Dyches, but you're not using them in these jump ball situations, these corner fades, anything like that where you can use that size to your advantage. That's something that I just, in my opinion, I feel like we're not utilizing our weapons to the best of their ability.
I was just happy to see the creativity. How many times have we sat on here and got on Coach Locks about this? This is college football.
That's very true.
Creativity wins. Everyone and their brother has ran a flea flicker for a touchdown versus us. I've never seen it with us. The biggest trick play that we had was the inside pitch to Dupree on the like Andy Reid-esque tight end option. Like, that was like a trick play for us when that's like part of some people's regular offense. So I was excited to see something different. He pulled out all the stops.
Yeah.
I'm sure that the team enjoyed it. I'm sure there was a little bit of hype just involving the defensive linemen in the back to get like the mental side of things, like, we're pulling out the tricks. We're going to do this. We're going to beat these guys at all costs. So I get it. I'm happy to see it. I hope it works better. I hope they keep working at it and keep it in the repertoire and it wasn't a one-off. It's the runs you would have thought would be more successful. There were a couple. I do want to go back to the Deshaun Jones touchdown because I just rewatched the game a couple hours ago. And one of the most underrated parts of that Deshaun Jones touchdown is that ball was like 9 inches from Hemby's face, and Hemby knew it wasn't his.
And let it go through. Yeah.
Because as a freshman in that high pressure fourth down situation, he could have tried to catch that and fuck it up real easy. That was huge in that moment.
Agreed.
Yeah. I thought so too. Again, you know, I thought that was a great play by Deshaun. I think he's come up clutch a couple of times this year, and you know, even before the season, you know, I was pretty high on him just because, you know, I think, you know, injuries have really held him back, but I think he's been able to flash and
play like a grown up.
Yeah, especially in a veteran heavy room. So it's been a welcome sight so far this year.
And yep. Erased the 15-yard penalty since early. That was the biggest negative of him always. Yeah. So he's done great.
He's done better the lot since, you know, really SMU.
Yeah.
Now, I know they put up 43 points. We all know it wasn't 43 points. It was really 36 points. But at the end of the day, you switching gears, go on the defensive side of the ball. You got to be happy with their defensive performance in this game, especially in the secondary. I know we were able to shut down Henderson in the run game early, but then the backup back came in and kind of ran at will against us a little bit, up the middle. But secondary-wise, probably one of the better games. Again, you're going against a Heisman candidate in C.J. Stroud, and I thought they held their own. I think there wasn't a weak spot between Deontay Banks and Still and Bennett. I mean, everybody played well in that secondary.
Yeah, and a top three wide receiver in the nation and Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, it's to bottle him up the way they did was really impressive. And you could see them just hype from beginning to end, just really into it, locked in, communicating. You know, there was the couple lapses in, you know, things that could have gone great. It was a little bit of over pursuing on the fumble on the 5-yard line where the guy ran to the player and not the ball that was laying on the ground easy. There was the offsides that continued the clock eating play by Cowan late in the game. But overall, there was just unbelievable play. And then the biggest bonehead of all time. I know that you text me about this too, Fred. Akeem Bisode with that 15-yard penalty, which was stupid. A patty cake hit 10 minutes after the ball was gone. That's got to be one of the dumbest 15-yard penalties I've ever seen.
Yeah. I don't care how much of a patty cake hit it was. It was stupid. It was,
but but if you're going to do that, you might as well get ejected and end something.
Get
all right.
Your money's worth.
You don't just like make his shoulders come back slightly. What was that? You know that's getting called. You know it's getting called. Yep. There's a back judge. He's standing there.
It was the worst. I texted you at that the minute it happened. He wouldn't see the field for the rest of the game if it were me, if I was coaching. I didn't honestly pay attention. I don't know if he was back on the field after that. I saw Locks kind of get into him a little bit on the sideline, and after that, he just kind of disappeared. I didn't see him much for the rest of the game.
For good reason.
I didn't think, you know, I thought obviously that was a stupid penalty, but, you know, luckily for Maryland, it was just, you know, one of a handful of inopportune plays, I'd say.
Yeah.
Just really can't have that, especially for, you know, a second year guy that probably steps into a big role next year. Especially you need that defensive line, you know, rushing attack, you know, they did well in the first half, kind of forcing Ohio State to go one dimensional. But then DeLon Hayden, he did a good job the second half. I think he finished with 143 yards in the second half.
Yeah.
I thought it was, you know, an impressive performance by the defense. And like you guys said, the secondary, I thought, you know, even it's funny, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr., he wasn't, you know, expected to be the number one guy, obviously an extremely talented player, but going into the season, he wasn't supposed to be the guy for him. And it's just kind of a testament to just how strong that room is. And I thought, especially for a unit that's really struggled with, you know, PIs, holds all season. I know Ja'Corian Bennett got called for a questionable pass interference. From my perspective, I thought, you know, it was I thought it was just a holding. I didn't think it was PI, but again, you know, it's just, you know, overall 95% of the time, Maryland's defense did a good job making Ohio State, you know, play into Maryland's defense a little bit.
And one of the things that makes Marvin Harrison Jr. so good, now that I've got to watch him up close, is he offensive pass interference is on almost every play, but he gets away with it. He's good at it.
Yep.
That even the one that he got called, you know, on the very first play, like there was both offensive and defensive. Yes, we hit him early, but he also pushed off. That's why he got back into him. So like that was constant all game. Luckily, he didn't toss it.
Any of the best receivers in the NFL, they're all that way. Devontae Adams is that way. Stephon Diggs is that way. Everybody knows how to create separation illegally, but without anybody knowing about it, without anybody seeing. His father, Marvin Harrison Sr., was great at it when he played as well. So I'm sure, obviously, he's been taught very well from a young age on that. But that kid's going to be something special, and he's going to be a lot of fun to watch on Sundays for sure. But again, as much as you can say that it's a happy loss, I mean, it's a loss that I feel good about. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at with this. I fully expected to lose this game. The fact that we were in it, I even texted you at halftime and said, the fact that we're at 13-10 and a win, it's already a win in my books, regardless of what happens in the second half. And to stay in it all the way till the end, the way that they did, again, it just goes to show the direction of what this team is. This is now the number four team in the nation, Michigan, on the road, that you lost by one possession. You take the number two team down to 6 seconds left in the game. Again, I know it was a shit show versus Penn State, but it was one shit show so far this season. We got one game left to go before the season's over, so I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, hopefully season. That was not a shit show where it changes everything.
Yeah. But I mean, for the last few years, it's been 2, 3, 4 games that the team just completely falls apart. Yes, we're sitting at 4 losses right now, but honestly, it's just the Penn State game that I feel terrible about the loss.
Yeah, Wisconsin, we lost to the weather. Penn State, we lost to a team. It's a terrible loss. It was bad. It's okay to feel good about this loss because, again, it was one of our two goals. Our goals was to increase the wins, to get to 7-8 wins, and to not be embarrassed by the big dogs.
Right.
And this was not embarrassing. This was a good showing versus the big dogs. Do we want to win a couple of these? Sure.
Of course. You got to get over the hump at some point. I get that.
Yeah, at some point. But this was part of the growth of this culture, so it was a necessary step.
Yeah, I mean, I think more of, you know, I think, well, next step is definitely win. I think, you know, just kind of with the performance this weekend, I think what it does is kind of validates, you know, that Locksley, I mean, that was the closest that Maryland's played Ohio State since 2018. I know they didn't play in the 2020 season, but, Nicholas Harper, he was a guy that was on campus for the game. I believe he stayed throughout. He did stay throughout, was on campus hours afterwards. But, for him, you know, seeing on a couple plays where, you know, there were just, you know, Maryland wasn't 100% executing right, and you were able to turn to him and say, hey, you're able to be the missing piece. A guy like Rico Walker, and say, hey, you can be the missing piece. Look at how we need to set the edge a little bit. Like that's what it helps validate. But I do think that, you know, that getting to that next step, like if Maryland beat Ohio State, that would have been huge because, you know, look at Nick Carber, Shane Beamer he's just still getting things going down in South Carolina. He was watching on his phone, South Carolina beat Tennessee. So I do think that, you know, beating one of these top teams is still undoubtedly the goal. From my perspective, it's, you know, you can be, comfortable or satisfied with, you know, how they played and what the final score was, and know that, hey, you know, we didn't get our asses kicked, but I still think it just adds, you know, just a little bit more pressure for next year for Locksley to be able to beat, you know, the Ohio States, the Michigans, and play better against Penn State. But you are right. I completely agree, you know, in terms of, you know, Penn State, that was just the one bad game, and then Wisconsin shut up the weather. So I do agree with that assessment.
Yeah, I just feel like we're taking steps in the right direction. Of course, we'd like to skip a few steps on the way and get to where we want to be faster. But at the end of the day, we're not stuck on the same step. We're not going back a step. We're progressing, and this was a next step in the progression.
As long as we take care of business where we think we will, I think that we will win this next game. And I think that that puts us in a situation where if we're winning 7 games in the Big Ten East, whoever we're matching up against was winning 7 games somewhere worse than the Big Ten East. Right. So we have a good chance at winning that game as well. So at that point, we're going to look back at this year and just really hate how we lost to Penn State and really, really hate that Purdue went wrong. That loss kills.
And if Maryland can win this weekend, they'll be able to tie, I know it's only 4 wins, but we'll be able to tie program record for, you know, most Big Ten wins in a season. So and be able still to get 5-2 at home. We talked about it last week. You know, if they're able to, you know, win this weekend, which I expect them to, and then, you know, win a bowl game, it is still the first 8 win season in
2012. Quite some
time. Exactly. So again, the program has to kind of get to that level, but I fully agree that, you know, next year, number one on the to-do list for Locksley is be one of these top dogs.
Well, a lot of things can fall apart quickly if you don't turn the card on this week and look forward to next week, because you got to win next week to get the 7 wins to be able to do that 8th win in the bowl, like you're saying. And next week, it's Rutgers. I know when we first started looking at the schedule, we all picked this was a game that we should win handedly. It shouldn't be a problem. But listen, anything can happen on any given Saturday, and Rutgers is next on the schedule. Saturday at 12 o'clock. Terps come in favored by 14 at this point. The over and under is set at 49. ESPN has us at an 88.2% on the predictor board. How are you guys feeling about this game? Have your thoughts changed on where we should be? Do you think 14 is too much? Where are you guys at with this game so far?
Yeah, I think, you know, 2-3 touchdown and Maryland win is kind of what I expect. I don't think this Rutgers team is very good, and I think Maryland, both sides of the ball, should really be able to control. So I feel good that they'll be able to win this weekend. Obviously, you know, you want to be able to end the 3-game slide, and I think there's a sense of urgency in order to do that, especially on senior day, not night, it's for a noon kickoff. But I think that Maryland is clearly the better team. So as long as they don't shoot themselves in the foot, right?
Yeah, hey, exactly.
You remember last year?
No.
Copy paste, bro.
Yeah.
Copy paste.
Exactly.
That's the way I look at this. I don't think it's going to be any different. I think that there's a real good chance that we finally get to see this wide receiver swan song. Like, all these guys that are supposed to be leaving showing up and getting the points that they deserve. You look, we already put up almost 10 points more a game than Rutgers, 28.5 to their 19. And that's just overall. I think that they're going to really lay some wood and blow this out. I'd take Maryland with the points.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I don't think this will be a problem, but again, you know, I don't want to get caught up in
there's gonna be a flea flicker, I can promise you.
I listen, defend it. I get it. I don't want to get caught up in the feeding this guy or buffing, you know, trying to get this guy's stats up to make it look better. Win the fucking game. Any which way you can do it, whether that means running the ball, whether that means, you know, whatever it takes, win the game. So that way you can take into that 7 win and go into the bowl game with a positive vibe of the progression of where things are going. Because again, it's Big Ten football. I mean, I know they don't look good on paper. They're 100 yards less than us a game total. Defensively, they're putting up about similar to same numbers. So I don't know. They've got a few guys on the offense that we do need to keep an eye on. I know they kind of got a revolving door at running back, but their current number one, Kyle, how do you say his last name? Is it McConaughey? Is that right?
Well, let's go with that. That's good enough.
5'9", 205-pound sophomore, had one big game against MSU, 24 for 162 yards. That's been really the issue with our defense this year, are the backs that put up the big games, the guys that have over 150, 200 yards. We don't want to see that in this game. We want to see more, you know, clogging up the middle and defending against the run, shutting down their one threat that they do have. And if they could do that, Maryland should win this game handedly.
Yeah, that was legit the only game over 50 yards. So hopefully that was a blip in the radar. That's not going to happen. But yeah, you can't let that happen or you can't win the game. I did get a little scared last week when Rutgers was up on Penn State 10-7 as they put the scoreboard up in the stands. I'm like, what is going on there? But they then allowed 55 unanswered points. That is unbelievable. Or not 55 unanswered, but 48 unanswered points. It's just kind of mind-blowing that kind of collapsed, but it is. It's just weird they had a lead is the only difference that made it there.
Right.
I don't expect they have anyone that can really beat us, so we need to not beat ourselves.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when Maryland's kind of giving up big plays or just a lot of yards on the ground against the run, they've done so against, you know, offensive lines that have been able to control the line of scrimmage. And Maryland's defensive line will be able to, I think, at least test, but I expect them to kind of win the battle in the trenches, especially on defense. Offensively, you know, I think they kind of showed some signs last week. Obviously, I think, you know, a guy like Jalen Duncan just kind of is his, you know, last chance to kind of step up. But I do think that both sides of the ball, that, you know, Maryland is the better team. So as long as they're kind of able to control the trenches, I think Maryland should be able to disrupt the passing attack and kind of minimize that run game. So,
I will say kudos to Mason Lunsford, you know, coming back and playing. It
changed everything.
Yeah. Having Lunsford out there and moving Branch back to center really made that offensive line formidable, and they did a very good job. I mean, there were some times where they didn't chip coming off the edge and they didn't have the right protection set up for Leah. That wasn't that the offensive line wasn't doing. That was just the wrong play call. That was a wrong play design scheme. But overall, I thought the offensive line had a hell of a game. And if we could see that transition into this game, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, one guy was the problem child. The only one that had us excited for this year, Jalen Duncan, just keeps getting beat. I don't understand how it was the linchpin. Like, when he announced he was coming back, it gave us all so much hope. But I just don't understand. It's like he just turns and is watching the guy run at Talia. It's mind-blowing every time I see it.
Yeah. All right, so what do we expect to see this final week in the shell? Ryan, I'll let you start it off. What's your prediction for this game? How do you see it ending?
I mean, it just goes down to their signal caller. You look at, they got a sophomore, Evan Simon, with more interceptions than touchdowns. He's got 4 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, 750 yards on a 56% passing. I think our defense is going to really show out. We're going to finally get our hands on some more balls like we did versus Purdue, and then we're going to make them count because it is senior week and they're going to score. So I think it's going to be big. 45-13.
45-13. All right. Nice. Ahmed, where do you got it?
I'm a little bit closer to that. I got 33-10 Maryland. I think Maryland's going to be able to kind of click on offense. I think Robin Hemby is going to have a touchdown of 50 yards or more on the ground.
Okay.
That is my hot take. I just feel like he's due at this point. It's been a couple games since we've really seen him kind of take over. And I feel like this week, don't know why, but I just think that, you know, Maryland skill players on both sides of the ball are dominant. And again, you know, for Maryland to be able to end this 3-game slide, they have to win this weekend. And I'll be curious to see, you know, what happens if they win this weekend. You know, how does that alter bowl projection, things like that? I think, you know, this is a pretty marketable team, especially with, you know, Talia Tagovailoa at quarterback, and, you know, on a national scale, everyone knows him as Tua's little brother. And especially with, you know, just the NFL potential on both sides, you know, a lot of players, I think it'll be really interesting. So I think first off, Maryland has to take care of business, and I think they'll be able to cruise their way to that.
Yeah, I think we're all pretty much in the same boat. I'm going with 38-17 Terps here. If I'm going to make a bold prediction, I'm going to say it's going to come from special teams in this game. I see Octavian Smith returning one to the house in this game. I think that he's due. He's having a big year. You can see that he's so close on so many plays from breaking loose. I think that this is the game that he does it. I don't know. I think this is a game that if we just play clean football, if we play like we're supposed to, the scoreboard will take care of itself.
Exactly. So we'll see. I'll be interested to see what the crowd is. Noon kickoff on BTN. It'll be, like I said, you know, last game in CQ Stadium.
Yeah.
I think I'll have a lot more space in this one. I think it'll be a lot easier. I don't think I'll be standing up quite as much. I don't think the girls will be in any danger. I think everything will be fine on this crowd. And honestly, we looked at each other last week. You're like, we kind of, take for granted how nice it is that no one comes to the games.
Right. I did want to get your guys' take on the latest bowl projection, because as of right now, the latest that I'm seeing would be the Guaranteed Rate Bowl, which is Tuesday, December 27th in Phoenix, Arizona. Current matchup could be Kansas or Oklahoma, I've seen as well. What's your guys' takes on going to Arizona? I mean, it's kind of far. I don't know how the Terp fans are going to travel for that. I know you and I probably will, Ryan, but I don't know. Terp
sounds like a lot of time off work. Don't tell anybody where I am.
Yeah, I'm cool with anywhere warmer. And
I hear
you know,
that.
To be blunt, New York wasn't too far away, and I can't say they were. It's not like we packed Yankee Stadium, so
right.
Yeah, everyone that mattered. We did great, and it was awesome.
So I mean, I'd be cool with it. I think, you know, I saw Texas Tech, and like you said, Oklahoma, Kansas. You know, some of those. It feels kind of weird. I think Kansas would be a kind of a fun matchup, just kind of with Kansas's their rise this season. I think that'd be kind of intriguing. Oklahoma would be kind of cool. You know, I don't think that around in Oklahoma, I think they played once or twice in the 50s, if memory serves correct. But it'd be kind of cool to see some former DMV talent go up against Maryland in that one. So, but destination, like I said, anywhere warmer than here, I am perfectly fine with.
Yeah, I'm on board with that too. I just, you know, in last year's game at the, you know, in New York, it felt like Terp fans traveled well. Obviously, it's right up the, you know, what, a 3.5-4 hour drive right up the road, right? So it was easy. I just, that's the only thing I'm a little bit worried about, was what the turnout would be for a game like that for Terp fans.
I can tell you the last one before this was the Mobile Alabama Bowl, and no one was going. Just the parents of the kids. So like, you're not getting the DMV crowd to go tour Mobile. That's right. Just not happening.
All right, guys, let's switch it over to the hard court. Let's go over to basketball, man, where things are really, really exciting now for the Terps. 5-0 start on the season. They currently the number 23 ranked team in the country, according to the AP, 25 in the coaches poll after winning the Hall of Fame tip-off championship over the weekend. Look, Terps weren't even receiving votes for the top 25 just a few days ago. And to go in there and dominate this tournament that the way that they did, and to be in the top 25 now, far exceed my expectations. I know it's early. I know it's only 5 games into the year. But these two teams in St. Louis and Miami were very marketable teams. They were teams that were just fringe top 25 heading into this tournament.
Yeah, and I think especially Miami, I thought it was going to be really interesting to just see how they played, because, you know, just being a guard dominant team, I thought it'd be kind of interesting, you know, with Maryland, you know, not having the biggest lineup, you know, how much do we see Dante Scott and Julian Reese out there? You know, how are they able to run it? And turned out it just didn't matter. I just thought the first 3 games that defensively, you expect the defense to kind of be able to control or hold its own, especially against, you know, smaller opponents or lesser, you know, non-power or not high major programs. But I just thought for that to continue, the way that they're playing defensively, and obviously just being able to shoot the way that they have, shooting over 50% through the weekend, I thought it's just been the results have been great, but how they've also been playing has just been equally as fun to watch, honestly.
Yeah, all 5 games they won by 18 points or more. And really, like you said, I mean, this team's just still learning to play together. I mean, defensively has been the biggest surprise to me, how they've played and gelled so quickly on the defensive side. Offense was a little spotty in the first couple of games, but like you said, through this tournament, they really turned things around from the field and from three. Dante Scott just playing in an absolute a beast of a level right now, named the tournament MVP, 24.5 points per game in the tournament, 6.5 rebounds, shot 68% from the floor and 55% from three. I know, Ryan, you were a little worried about Dante Scott and
fine,
the body
I'll get on the board
transition.
Skinny Dante, but fine.
Skinny Dante is still able to dominate down low and outside. He's still the same player. He's just more athletic. He's more fluid. He looks like a better ball handler. Like all of the things, he's really rounded out his game so far. He looks really, really good.
Yeah, it's not the only one. Juju's looking really good. We haven't really ran up against a, you know, prototypical big yet, but he's taking care of every big they laid in front of him. So it's been really fun to see him, both, you know, his inside and outside game. We have seen a little bit of what we begged for, that inside outside passing to 3-point line that we haven't seen in forever, that doesn't exist in college basketball. So if you can make that work, it's going to surprise some teams. So I'm excited to see it. Everything that Willard has told us is coming true on the court. That's what my measure is at this point. It's too early for me to believe in rankings. These rankings are star ratings right now, because nobody actually knows how good the teams were that you beat. I was told Miami football was the greatest thing since sliced bread, and they're terrible. So maybe Miami basketball sucks too. So I'm not too worried about the rating. I hope it stays forever. But what I'm excited about is everything Willard told us from the day he got here is being shown on the court. He really wants to play faster. He really wants to run the traps. He really wants to do the things that we fell in love with at Maryland basketball during the Gary Williams era.
Yeah.
And I just feel like defensively, just, you know, Maryland, just they're, and it hasn't been, you know, just this weekend, you know, just all throughout the 5 games, the way that they're switching, to kind of have all these new pieces, have a new coaching staff, new system, and to be able to have that down so pat, to be so efficient defensively, I think that is kind of what sticks out most. And for that to continue against Providence and Miami, and you guys are right, you know, both of those schools, you know, that they could end up, or teams, excuse me, both of them could end up being, you know, disappointing this year. But But I feel like, and I actually, you know, Ben Page was talking about it, I think, on Facebook, and I said, you know, they could have gone 0-2 this weekend. They could have gone 1-1. And I feel like just the way that they're playing is what has me most fired up. So yeah. We'll see. Yeah. I think it'll be really interesting. Obviously, you know, they get Coppin State this weekend, Louisville right after, and then it's a tough 4-game slate. So, but then their first test, I mean, they have blown it out of the water in my eyes.
I was a little worried at the end of that game because Tremere Young was turning the ball over like it was going out of style. All of a sudden, right at the end, they were while they were crawling back, and you know, was our question mark we talked about last week. Like, at this next level, can he be what he was? Clearly, at the beginning of the year, versus the teams he was already playing against the last few years, he was fine. But for the most of that game, he was. But really got to get those turnovers in check, because all of a sudden they had figured him out late in that game and were picking his pocket. And that can't happen if we're going to be this good.
Well, that's fair. But I will say that Maryland did have a 10-point lead. I think it was from the 2:47 mark of the first half.
Starters were still out there.
Oh, I mean, you're right, 100%.
If we were turning the ball over with someone that wasn't our starting point guard, I wouldn't have worried about it. It was still our starting point guard.
I think that's fair. I think they only had, I think it was one turnover. I think it was like the 12-minute mark in the second half, and then I think they had 5 or 6 across the last 7 minutes. I mean, turnovers.
Most of the game was great.
The turnovers.
Like, oh no.
that was really the only time it felt like Miami was kind of chipping away. But other than that, I mean, I thought Maryland really controlled that game. Was disappointed I didn't get a chance to watch like the full St. Louis game live, because it was obviously football, hectic day. So I was actually, you know, going to the facility and then going back to the press box, and I would see it, and I think the first time I saw was they were up 10, and the next thing I saw they were up 25, and I was like, what the hell happened? I was like, is it us or is it them? And they're like, no, it's us. Okay, wow, I can get on board with this. So like I said, you know, they've really knocked it out of the park in my eyes this year.
And like you said, and you're absolutely spot on. Defensively, like I said, has been the biggest strength so far of this team. And when I talk, you know, 8-man rotation, Ryan, and things that we've seen in the past and wanting to see that, I don't necessarily mean, does that mean that we have 8 scores? What we're seeing is with the 5 scores that they have in their starting lineup, you have to have 2 or 3 of them on the floor at all times. But those other guys that rotate in and rotate out, is there a drop off defensively? Right. And we're not seeing that from everybody, from Emelian to Jahari. Like, all of them that step in have done very well defensively, and just let your 5 scores be your 5 scores. They can carry you through. You just don't want to see those where you have a 20-point lead drop down to a 5-point lead in a matter of 2 minutes because they can't defend the ball. You're not seeing that with this team. And again, to your point, Ahmed, to be doing this so quickly, just goes to show the kind of impact that Kevin Willard has had on this program already. And that was one of the things I really wanted to dive into this week, because what he's done, I mean, you know, there was a lot of critics, there was a lot of questions whether this was the right move. Was this going to be the right hire? We all knew that something needed to change, that something needed to happen. The Mark Turgeon era was over. Danny Manning wasn't going to be the right guy to manage this team moving forward. But was Kevin Willard going to be the guy? And in 8 months since his hiring, I mean, he has really just knocked it out of the park. Because you got to think where it starts, right? It started with coming in and kind of just getting the respect of the current roster players, right? It's because the key pieces, Dante Scott, Hakeem Hart, Juju, you had to get them to buy into the vision. If you didn't want to have to completely start from scratch and you wanted to have a competitive team your first year out there with, you know, obviously a short window to recruit and to get guys in there, you had to keep the heart of the team together and have them buy into the vision. He was able to do that. Check that. The next step was building a staff around with his connections to the area. He was able to do that. Check 2. Getting involved quickly on the recruiting trail and adding some pieces to kind of round out the roster to fill in around Dante Scott and Hakeem Hart and Juju. He was able to do that. Gets Young, gets Carey, gets Emelian through the portal, bringing in one of his guys from Seton Hall and Jahari Long, right? Noah Batchelor, getting him late. All of these commitments that they got really within a couple of months is super impressive. And then obviously picking up on the recruiting trail, and again, in a small window, to land a consensus top 20 overall class for next year. We talked about LaMuth and Kaiser and Harris Smith, the guys that they got and they inked on paper the other day. That's huge. That's huge. And to start his first season off at 5-0, what have we seen from the product? That was going to be the biggest question. What are we going to see on the floor? is there going to be changes? And everything that we've asked for, the press defense, the tempo, the scoring, everything has been good. I'm just really, really happy with the progress that he's made in such a small window. I just hope that not only am I buying in, are the fans going to continue to buy in? Because obviously you have fans on very different ends of the spectrum here, right? You had people that wanted Mark Turgeon out for a long time and that didn't care who that replacement was. They just wanted Turgeon out. Then you have the other guys who are the true Turgeonites who will defend Mark Turgeon until to the end. Were they going to be able to get those guys on board? And I tell you, maybe at Xfinity Center right now, they haven't bought in yet. If you're looking in the stands, you're still waiting for the crowd to show up. But you had fans at the tournament chanting Willard's name. You're seeing a very, very positive social media response from fans. So to me, everything is on the up and up, and everything is really looking up with this program.
You know how it is. UCLA will bring the fans out. And actually, it's December 20th, so the students won't even be there. So we might be disappointed on that one, too.
December 14th.
Oh, December 14th. Okay. Yeah. So are they still there at that point?
I think that's like the right at the end of exam, so probably a little bit. We'll see. Yeah. But I think they got Illinois on December 2nd, so that should draw a good
That student. One should be all right. Yeah, because they're playing even better without Coffee Cockburn. You don't get to determine how your name's spelled, sir.
But what I've seen so far, when you look back at the coaching tree of Maryland, you just talk about the two most recents, and Gary Williams and Mark Turgeon, they brought two very vast differences to the position, to head coaching. You had Gary, who would maximize effort and ability from the lack of talent that he had. He wasn't able to recruit big guys in, but he got the most out of the guys that he got by his coaching style and schemes.
He didn't want them, really. He didn't want the All-Americans, and once he got them, we started losing.
But that's,
so he might have been right.
Right, exactly, but that was his approach, right? And then on Mark, he was on the opposite end of that. He could recruit in the talent that would carry him through his shortcomings as an in-game coach. He wasn't a great in-game coach, but he had the talent that would keep them competitive and make them a top 25 team here and there, and in some tournament runs here and there. I think that Willard has the ability to be a perfect hybrid combination of what they bring together in their strengths. He's a good in-game coach from what I've seen so far. He's getting the most talent out of his guys that he's got there. And he's got the ability, obviously, to hit the pavement and bring in some marquee names. He did that in this class already, and he did it in no time. I don't know. Again, I just got really, really strong vibes with this team, and really, I'm high on Kevin Willard. I'm buying in.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything, I said this over the weekend, I think everything that he has shown so far, I mean, again, you know, sample size is small. It's only, you know, a couple, what, 7-8 months at this point, but everything that he's shown shows that he is capable of being the guy, which is, you know, validating your Damon Evans, Colin Sorum, you know, the people that make these decisions. I think, you know, the fans will come, no doubt, once the opponents become bigger and more wins. I would probably venture to say, if it wasn't, you know, maybe the Friday after Thanksgiving, maybe you get a little bit more fans. But I do think that, you know, just the level of optimism or buzz or whatnot is definitely hit a new level after this past weekend. So I think everything that we've been able to show, especially on defense, I mean, I'm a sucker for defense, and I feel like what they've done so far, just between the traps, full court, being able to just switch so effortlessly, it feels like, has just been probably the biggest joy in my eyes. So I think he's 10 out of 10 A+ so far.
They're holding teams to 36% shooting from the floor. That's pretty freaking impressive, man. That's real impressive.
That's a sticky stat, probably. That's one of the ones you can hope continues.
And another thing that I really like is just, you can see there's been a culture change and a culture shift within the locker room. I don't know if you guys watch like the post game videos. Obviously, Ahmed, you do, but I don't know, Ryan, if you've been keeping up on like the post game interviews and like the in the locker room celebrations and whatnot. You can see a genuine buy-in from the players, including Juju, your top guys, Juju and Dante and all the guys. Obviously they're praying water all over coach, and just it I don't know. It was a good vibe, something I hadn't seen with the program in a while. And I like his press conferences. I think he's very candid. He's very open. He's not boring like Turgeon was. There's just a lot to like.
I tweeted that out last week. I said these are the most informative Terps, you know, press conferences of any team in the last decade or so. Like, he actually says things that seem to be true, that seem to matter, and aren't just like the prototypical PR statements. So I do enjoy watching his press conferences more than anyone else, and I'm the football guy through and through.
I mean, he's just, you know, pretty blunt in his answers, and like, you know, like you said, you know, it's not
Jersey, it's not baby.
It's not a lot of coach speak. So it's been,
not that Kansas speak.
Like I said, you know, everything he's doing so far has been 10 out of 10. So we'll see. You know, they obviously ranked is not what, you know, if you ask a lot of Maryland fans looking at the roster a couple months ago, and you say, hey, especially looking at the front court, is Maryland going to be ranked? And you know, it's one thing for football when they go 4-0, 5-0, and you're like, is it worth it? Is it worth it? But like, you know, the eye test says, you know, maybe wait and see right now. See, you know, when to get the conference play. But, you know, the eye test right now kind of feels like it validates that early ranking, even though, you know, there were a lot of question marks about this team. So
I don't think anybody thought we were going to hold a trophy up of any kind this year. We've already done that, too.
Exactly. So, you know. Yeah, that's a good point, too. I mean, I know I know, you know me, I care less about rankings. But if there is a ranking out there that I will buy a little bit into, it's KenPom. And I know KenPom. Right now, they're 22nd in the latest KenPom rankings. They started the year as a projected 18-win team to now 22. They were projected to finish 10th in the Big Ten to now 4th in the Big Ten. We're talking 5 games into the season. That's a large jump. And if I'm going to give any credit to any or, you know, any kind of ranking system, Ken Pom for me is the one to go off of.
Let's average those, Freds. I don't know. We're going to win 19 and finish 6th in the Big Ten. That sounds more right.
I'm all right with that. That's fine, too. Better than I expected. But like you said, Friday night, it continues at the Xfinity Center. Juan Dixon comes back with Coppin State. That should be a game that we should handedly win. Next Tuesday, we got Louisville, which surprisingly, they're off to an 0-3 start. I mean, I didn't think they'd be great, but 0-3 to start the year is kind of surprising to me.
I didn't watch. Apparently, they got their butts kicked today. I think they had like 13 points or something like that at halftime.
Oh, so they're 0-4.
They're awful. Like, this has to be like...
See, that might be Miami. We don't know yet.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I mean, this team, they obviously started the season off with 3 consecutive 1-point losses. I mean, that's brutal. But yeah, no, they suck this year. Danny Manning, shout out.
Interesting. All right. Well, next Friday starts the Big Ten play. Like you said, number 16, Illinois, 4-1 on the year. They just lost to UVA on Sunday. So I think that'll be our first real big test. Honestly, I thought if we could win the games versus St. Louis in Miami, to me, that would prove something. I just never expected them to win the way that they did. I mean, they won those games in dominant fashion, both on the offensive side and on the defensive side. So if they can keep that together, man, it's going to be hard to stop this team. They're going to be in every game, even against the big guys, if they can put it together the way they have been so far. So I'm excited. I'm a lot more excited about this year than I ever thought I would be, just because, like I said, this was more of a test for the year. Let's just see how this thing works out. And we're expecting the talent to come in next year and things will do better. But man, I tell you, like I said, he just seems to be squeezing that lemon for every last little bit of juice that he can possibly get. And he's getting it to work in every which way. So I'm excited.
We're going to have to get down there, because right now I'm an absentee season ticket holder because I haven't been to a game yet.
I completely forget that you have tickets, because I would have gone to one or two of these games by now if I'd have remembered that you had the tickets. I didn't even think about it, but we'll be down there. We got to plan that out for sure. But hey, we appreciate you guys tuning in as always. If you're not doing so already, make sure you're following us on all our social media platforms. Make sure you're following us on Twitter. You can follow everything at Shell and Tell Pod. If you want to follow me, you can follow me at FredBLBS. Follow Ryan at TerpsBSpert. Follow Ahmed at Kafir the Turtle. And make sure you're following and subscribe to Inside Black and Gold. Ryan, sign us off.
Yeah, dropped a ton of heat, so... Make sure you're subscribed.
Nice.
All right, sorry. Yeah, I mean, he says, let's go.
I kicked ass this weekend. I'm not going to lie. So, yeah, if you care at all, I kicked ass. So,
love it. Love it.
Hey, Ahmed don't flex often. When he flex, it means something. Go get out there and read that stuff. All right, guys. You know, we got one more showing the shell. We got to set this off. Coach Locke says this is the end of the season, that the bowl games are starting next season. We'll see. We'll make the judge of that. But we're going to get down there. I think I have wrapped up my tailgate season, so don't come see me in Lot 4B because I'm going to be there for 5 minutes. But if you want to come see me in Section 7, I'll be there from kick till the fourth quarter whistle. I'm really excited to see these teams' last showing. Hope it's a blowout like we've all projected, and find out where we'll be traveling this winter to see our Terps. Till next time, guys, here's to wishing all is well under the shell.